The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 28th of June, 2023. How are you keeping? Good to have you on board. I hope you're all doing very well indeed. We have the lines open for you right now for you to comment on the topics we're discussing as the morning wears on, or if you want to raise your own issues. You know the story, don't you? 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on the number 07491 25,000. Now in both instances, if you call it from outside the Republic, and we have people listening and watching all over the place, please feel free to get involved in the conversation as well. 00353 866 20 5000 is that WhatsApp or text number. And if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. Right, okay. Let's start the programme, as we do every single morning, with a look at what's making the newspapers today. We're starting with the locals today, but again, flabbergasted at the extent of coverage in the Nationals of the RTE saga. Now, I'm not surprised when I say flabbergasted. It's just the actual extent of it, how many pages it covers. But anyway, we'll get to that in a moment, though. I suspect that some of you perhaps maybe are getting a bit tired of that story, but we're not focusing greatly on it anyway. It just happens to be on the front of the papers. Inishowen's nine county councillors shared a combined €367 in wages and expenses last year, benefiting from the first full year of a pay rise that increased their basic representative payment by almost 10,000. This is the Inishowen Independent. When elected in Donegal County Council following the local elections in May 2019, councillors were entitled to a basic representative payment of just €17,382. However, following a government decision in 2021, the basic annual payment was increased to €27,109, linking a councillor's basic salary to the civil service post of assistant staff on officer. So, sorry to conflate stories here, but you're getting all of your nine Inishowen County councillors for significantly less than you're getting Joe Duffy. Okay, so that, I mean, you could look at it that way. That's one way to look at it, okay? For a full year, they're all paid less than one person is being paid. And that's not sour grapes, by the way. It's just an interesting couple of stories out at the same time. Right, the Donegal Post this morning. The chairman of the Donegal branch of the Irish Hotels Federation has written to local TDs on behalf of 55 Donegal hotels and guest houses to highlight growing concerns. Paul Diver penned the letter in response to government plans to increase consumer taxes, VAT on hospitality and tourism, at a time they claim people's personal finances are already under significant pressure due to the cost of living crisis. Now, I don't contest what Mr. Diver is saying. And I do have an awful lot of respect for local hotels and people in that industry, of course, and also given the fact that they employ lots of people. But there must be something going on with the prices they're charging to some extent too, when you see that, you know, over a million people are currently or are on the way to Dublin Airport. Everyone I know seems to be flying out of the country at the moment. Now, presumably they've looked at what's on offer in Ireland in terms of the weather and value for money, and they've decided they can go to Portugal or Spain or Lanzarote cheaper. But anyway, Mr. Diver states, I'm writing on behalf of Donegal Hotels and Guest Houses representing 50 local businesses to highlight our growing concern about plans in September to increase consumer taxes on Irish hospitality and tourism. So I'll ask the question directly out there, and there's a whole mixture of people listening. There are people in the industry, there's people that work there, there are people that have looked at the price of hotels. Do you believe that the 9% VAT rate, for example, for hospitality should be retained? What's your view on the hotel industry, good and bad? Let us know, 086 60 25,000. The Inish Times tells us that the assessment of an application for an investigatory foreshore licence for a proposed wind farm off the coast of Inishowen has been paused indefinitely. Haven Offshore Array has submitted an application for a five-year foreshore investigatory licence for a project containing a mixture of static and floating wind turbines in initial sites of more than 1,000 1,500 square kilometres, with the nearest point to the coast 20 kilometres from Malin Head. A geophysical survey for the project was carried out last year. Haven Offshore Array said the licence will allow the company to refine the site choice and carry out surveys to properly assess the viability of the project. Last month, the Department of Housing, Planning and Local Government paused all assessments for offshore renewable energy foreshore licence assessments that have not already gone to statutory consultation, which includes the licence for the Haven Offshore Array project. So that's indefinitely shelved. The Finn Valley Voice tells us that Finn Valley Councillor Martin Harley, the new Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, says he wants to work with the HSE to, in some capacity, to promote men's health. He wants men to start talking about health issues. Men are not inclined to talk about things until it's too late, he said. I encourage men to go to their GP if they think there is something wrong, either physically or mentally. Sometimes when men go to the GP, it's too late, he said. He was speaking after the election at Monday's afternoon annual general meeting at County House Lifford. Congratulations to him on his appointment. So on to the Nationals. And as I say, you would genuinely struggle to find much news outside of the RTE story. Where do you start with it? RTE bosses, this is the Irish Independent, RTE bosses have failed to take the heat out of the Ryan Tubridy payment scandal, with a statement pointing most of the blame at former Director General Dee Forbes. Now, in a conversation with Deputy Thomas Pringle last week, a conversation with Piers Doherty a couple of days ago, this all before we got the statement from RTE, this detailed statement. It was that, you know, I put it to both that, you know, people are sick in this day and age, and whether it's RTE, the HSE or whatever it might be, that there is zero accountability. And what happened yesterday effectively is that RTE released a 9-page statement that effectively said no one is to blame except Dee Forbes. Dee Forbes, who has now resigned from her position and is beyond the scope of any inquiry. She can't be compelled to be involved in anything. Now, there's no criminality suggested here, but in terms of sanction. So we have a situation here where we have a 9-page statement that effectively says the one person that knew what was going on, it wasn't even Ryan's fault, wasn't the executive, the boards, whoever you want to structure it. It was no one else's fault except Dee Forbes. And that is the one person that just happens now to have resigned. Now, in this country, I was under the impression that you had to, and I could be wrong, but that you had to give notice of your resignation. I think it's a minimum of a week, depending on how many years you've served. Now, it seems that that minimum didn't apply to Miss Forbes. I'd be very interested to hear what she had to say at the Oireachtas committees later today and tomorrow, because really, to be honest with you, without her statements and without other people turning up, there's just going to be talking shops. Nothing's going to come off it. But why did she not have to give notice? And if she did have to give notice, who waived that so that she is beyond now the scope of the committee? She says she's not going to speak at them because she's sick, and she's not going to be compelled to do so. Because there's what's her name? That thing's ongoing at the moment too. There's cases ongoing there. So that's a no-no. So as it stands, effectively, no one is going to be held account. Now, unless the political pressure builds and builds and builds, but anyway, who's to say? So their lengthy statement, which showed the broadcaster repeatedly caved into pay demands from Tubridy's agent, was met with alarm and astonishment in political circles. The credibilities of RTE's management claimed that only Ms. Forbes could have known that publicly declared pay figures for the Star were understated, is set to be a central line of questioning at an Oireachtas committee meeting today. So effectively, what they'll say is, I'd love to answer your question, but that's the responsibility of Dee Forbes. That's effectively now how they've insulated themselves from any line of questioning. And anyway, members of the Oireachtas Media Committee will question RTE executives were unimpressed last night by the version of events presented amid widespread political disquiet over the contents of RTE's statement. One senior minister told the Irish Independent the broadcaster's latest account raised further questions. Dee Forbes did it, seems to be the mantra, but I'm not sure that cuts it, they added. And as I say, there's still a whole load of questions to be answered, and also Mr. Tubridy is still in line for 275,000 payments. It's really quite remarkable, and just to just to a couple of things that jump out. And as I say, take the personalities out of it. This is just an organisation that we fund. Let's just view it like that, because I do understand some people would have affections for the likes of Ryan Tubridy and feel this is a witch hunt on him or something or other. But that's not my motivation, certainly. But they had this deal with with Renault. And the way it was done was, it did cost them, because they gave a 75,000 euro credit note. But not only that, Ryan Tubridy agreed as part of this deal through his agent to do three functions for them, for Renault. And RTE paid to host those functions in and around 45, 50,000 euros. So that's an extra 45, 50,000 euro. Renault didn't even have to pay for them. So why was RTE paying to host three Renault events that they had done this deal with Ryan Tubridy to get an extra 75,000? So that bumps it up to 120. And out of this barter account that they used the money, because it was paid, because they underwrit the two 75,000s, right? They had to pay it. So they paid it out of this barter account. But the way that account is set up, it actually cost them an additional 70,000 to pay it out of this account. So it's not just 150, it's 150 plus 45 plus 70. So to pay 150 to Ryan Tubridy, it cost over 300,000, which is really quite remarkable. But who's at fault? No one, only Dee Forbes. That's what they're saying. That's what the, and I'm sure Miss Forbes is not too happy about it. They're saying it's not, no one else left in the organisation is to blame. It's only Dee Forbes who has just left. And as I say, who accepted her resignation without the required notice, because that would leave her still at work and within the scope of the Oireachtas Committee. Again, it just is another publicly funded situation that just stinks to high heavens. Right, OK, the Irish Times now. Gardaí are treating a missing persons case in Donegal as a probable murder investigation following the discovery of a blood-splattered car in the Killybegs area. Now, a lot of you out there are probably wondering, you know, well, I've heard this. This has happened. Why is that happening? Why is nothing being said? I can't really shed much light on that. Our policy, generally speaking here, when I say generally speaking, it's kind of strictly speaking, is to report official information only in these cases, you know, not to speculate, not to presume, not to use sources on matters that are so serious as this. But we have still at this point, and no media organisation at this point has been given the information that anyone is missing officially. We haven't been told anyone is missing. We haven't been told officially by Gardaí that it's a murder investigation or whether it's a missing persons investigation. Their only reference they have made officially is an alleged assault. So everything else that you're reading is obviously sourced from somewhere or other. But that is why there's this gap in the information. And then, of course, two people were arrested. And then people probably presumed, well, this means that and that means the other. But those two people now have been released without charge. And I didn't see any reference of a file pending for the DPP. But again, we can't make it up. We can't quote unverified sources. There is no information coming from An Garda Síochána beyond what I've just mentioned. But just to read on here, Gardaí are treating a missing persons case in Donegal as a probable murder investigation following the discovery of a blood-splattered car in the Killybegs area. Again, that has not been officially confirmed. A man and a woman were released without charge last night following their arrest on Monday in a search involving the Irish Coast Guard, the Donegal Mountain Rescue Team and Gardaí's ongoing for a missing man. Again, that's not officially released information. Though I'm not questioning it. It is reliable, but it's just not official. The search, which began on Monday, is centred on Slieve League, a tourist spot which is the setting for Europe's highest sea cliffs. Gardaí are trying to contact the missing man's family, but are having difficulty in tracking them down. Gardaí are still trying to piece together the events leading up to the man going missing over the weekend. Their investigations are focusing on the car, which had been found with bloodstains. The car first came to Garda attention after being involved in a road traffic collision. Okay, so as I say, as soon as we get official line, official information, we shall bring it to you. Just looking on the inside of that paper as well here, Ireland's most senior public servants can look forward to pay rises after the government decided to set up a special review group to make recommendations on salaries for top civil servants, semi-state bosses, judges and other senior officials. The move follows recommendations made in a report which says the appointment system should be reformed and hiring processes should be completed more quickly. Minister for Public Expenditure, Pascal Donoghue, welcomed the report compiled by a panel chaired by Donal de Butler and said he examined each of its 38 recommendations. So good news, if you are a senior civil servant or a judge, you are in for a nice little bonus in your salary. Just reading this on the back of our conversation we had yesterday with Luke Ming Flanagan, who for a long time, it's nothing new, has been advocating for the legalisation of cannabis. But let's see what our neighbours in Europe are doing. Let's go to France. Cannabis smokers in France will face on-the-spot fines of up to €2,500 in a bid to tackle drug-related gang violence. Police are being given 5,000 portable card machines to force people in possession of the drug who do not have cash to instantly pay a penalty starting at €150 for a first-time offence. French President Emmanuel Macron said that it was unacceptable that 65% of the 350,000 fines issued for cannabis possession since September 2020 had not been paid, as he outlined the new plans to clamp down on the dodgers. In an interview with La Provence, a newspaper published in the crime-hit city of Marseille, where 23 people have been killed in drug gang violence this year alone, the president said that decriminalising cannabis was not the solution. So they don't believe that decriminalising it, let alone legalising it, is the solution. But the police over there are going around with card machines to instantly deduct fines from people found to be smoking cannabis. Where are we now? Which story am I going to read from here? Yes, a healthcare worker, this is in the Irish Daily Star, a healthcare worker who liked and shared a video of an offensive song about murdered Michaela McAreevy has had a claim that she was unfairly sacked from her job dismissed. An industrial tribunal panel described the streaming of the video in an Orange Hall last year as a truly disgraceful event and ruled that the Southern Health and Social Care Trust was entitled to dismiss Rhonda Shields from her employment in 2022. There was another person, Andrew McDade, who streamed it also. There was another person that appealed their dismissal and their appeal was rejected. The Mirror this morning tells us that Leo Varadkar has led Get Well Soon wishes to Sinn Féin leader who's in hospital recovering from an operation. Mary Lou McDonald said yesterday she's doing well and is looking forward to getting back to work soon. She tweeted, personal news, I had surgery on Friday and I'm now recovering well. I expect to be back in action in a number of weeks. A million thanks to all the incredible staff at Rotunda Hospital for your excellence, care and kindness. Onwards and upwards, she said. The Taoiseach was speaking during leaders' questions, and there's been quite a lot of goodwill on social media from other politicians of all backgrounds towards Mary Lou McDonald. And finally, Fiat has stopped making grey cars, saying they do not embody the joyful Italian way of life. But the car maker's move could backfire, as it's been the most popular colour for the past 5 years. Fiat chief executive Olivier Francois said, Italy is joy, optimism, love, passion, life. What has grey got to do with all that? Nothing. The world doesn't need another grey car. I wonder how long it will take them to reverse that decision. Now, it depends what kind of a grey car they're talking about. There's quite a few of those. It's kind of like a matte grey. I wouldn't be a huge fan of it. I'm not sure how those cars will shift on the second-hand market, but anyway, each to their own. I think he'll end up reversing that decision. All the puns in the world intended there. Okay, that was a run-through of some of the stories making the headlines on the front pages today. Good morning to Breed, Charlie, another Charlie and Rosemary amongst those watching the show. Just to remind you that if you're at home or if it suits you, you can watch a live stream of the show every day, including today, of course, on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, your phone, laptop, tablet, smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're across Facebook, Highland Radio News and Sport and Highland Hub. And on our website, you can just click Watch Live. OK, and in fact, you'll be able to see our next guest on the show coming up just after this quick commercial break. Now, you might remember a couple of months ago, we covered an issue over the review of NowDoc services. There were some concerns from members of the public, concerns from staff, I think almost particularly, And Councillor Jerry McMonagall has asked a question in relation to this at a recent health forum meeting. And the question was a simple one. Can I have an update on where the review of the NowDoc services for Donegal is currently at? And Councillor McMonagall has kindly joined us to run through the answer. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning.
Listeners. Yeah, thanks for being with us. Now, it is a wordy answer. You've picked through it. What do you believe the words say?
Very little.
that was my suspicion.
I said that yesterday. It's just a holding position. If you remember, they said that these discussions would conclude around the end of February, beginning of March. So I thought it was timely to ask the question for an update. Unfortunately, the chief officer wasn't at the meeting yesterday. So I had a number of questions coming out of his answers. And basically what they're saying is that they're fully committed to supporting their staff who currently work at the NowDoc service, and that they're dealing and engaging with all the stakeholders, and that they're working in partnership with NowDoc and CareDoc to ensure that the public using the GP at our service and the staff working are provided with the necessary supports to deliver the best care to our service users.
And they seem to be saying, and really, I suppose we'll know further on, Jerry, they're saying they're looking at where there might be any gaps in the operating model, and they're looking at how that operating model can be changed to best fill those gaps. So it doesn't really tell us anything as such. So what questions, and you've just put some of them there, but what key questions do you believe remain, or what would you like to see some clarity on at this point?
Well, they talk about trying to address the challenges that they're currently facing. And I was what I'm looking to establish is what are those challenges in relation to the service itself, and just from talking to members of the public. There seems to be sufficient GPs during the week, but at the weekend, it's fairly stretched, and people are concerned about that. And from the staffing point of view, this relocation to Carlow for the triaging centre from Letterkenny, I mean, there's currently 25 nurses employed via the triage in Letterkenny, and they're concerned about their positions. If it goes to Carlow, what will happen to them? They have made a submission to the Nurses Union, have made a submission to the National Oversight Body. But as yet, they're still in the dark. And they haven't been, you know, other than being told it's ongoing. But they certainly haven't been given any further information. So the other question I asked yesterday was when they said they're talking to all the relevant stakeholders, that have they been engaging with probably the major stakeholders, which are the service users? And again, I asked, was there a facility there that for the general public who use the service to make their feelings known? But once again, there was no one there who could answer that question. So there's a number of outstanding things, and they'll elaborate on what the challenges are, what the hold up to making a decision. Why is it taking so long for the review to be completed in relation to the number of GPs? Will it be sufficient to meet the demand? And then a lot of just from talking to the people who use the service, they invariably be referred to the emergency department. And then currently, and just recently, I've been hearing some complaints about the length of time from when they make their initial phone call, give their information, to getting a call back from the GP to give them a diagnosis, or, as I say, invariably, they refer them to the emergency department. So those are the issues at the moment that I'm meeting and being told about. And I just wanted some clarity around that, but unfortunately it didn't come yesterday.
Yeah, okay. And did they give any timeline, Councillor, in terms of when maybe some of those questions might be asked, answered, I beg your pardon, or when a decision might be made?
They said to me that I would be contacted as soon as possible, and they would ensure that the person dealing with it would be in contact with me quite soon.
Okay, well, we might leave it there then and come back to an update.
If I get any updates, sure, Greg, I might come back to you.
I appreciate it greatly. Thanks for that. Okay, I do indeed. Councillor Jerry McMonagall there. Maybe you work within the service and you can give us some further insight as to what's going on, or maybe you've accessed the service and maybe it's been a positive experience or otherwise. Some comments here. Greg, where is all the self-interest going to stop? We have had scandals within the church, Garda, on Bull Planala, the banks, charities, insurance, HSE. It appears the only one not creaming the crop is the working man on the minimum wage, because even those on benefits are working the double. Then we wonder why this country is on its knees. And other wages in this country are the same in every industry. Look at managers in the HSE and the civil servants, what they are on. It's outrageous. In the charity industry, CEOs, in some cases, are paid ridiculous money. Just got home from COS, had screenshot boarding pass scanner. Couldn't read it. They had to manually input my name, flight number, etc. to get me through. Quite embarrassing and held people up. So I think really what we're saying then is that screenshotting your boarding pass or your access to a concert or whatever it might be is not foolproof. Okay. President Michael D. Higgins is on €900 a day plus a free house with free bills and free food. He's another one whose wages should be reduced, believes a caller. Well, as we've been reporting, Gardaí are treating a suspected assault in South Donegal as a possible murder. A series of searches have been carried out around Sliabh League after reports of an incident last weekend. And that really is kind of all we have in terms of what the Gardaí officially releasing. They haven't really gone as far as the report has. I'll read what the Gardaí is saying just for absolute clarity. Gardaí and Ballyshannon continue to investigate an incident that occurred in the Sliabh League Killybegs area between Saturday the 24th of June and Sunday the 25th. The two people arrested in connection with this investigation on Monday were released without charge last evening. Public access to Sliabh League remains closed to facilitate this ongoing investigation. Investigating Gardaí continue to appeal to any person who may have information in relation to this incident to contact them. Now, I really fully understand the lack of information being released by Gardaí, but as I say, the media is speculating beyond that. Local to the area, Deputy Thomas Pringle joins us on the programme now. Fully conscious, Thomas, that really, you know, we don't know a great deal of information. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of conversation, a lot of speculation and concern, I suppose, in and around the area, because people perhaps don't actually officially know what's going on.
Well, I think there's a fair degree of understanding around the area that, you know, that the guards can't say anything and it can't be known what's actually happening, because, I mean, in fairness to everybody, it has to be properly investigated, and that and you wouldn't want to do anything that would cause a problem at some stage in the future if charges are due to become to be pressed or whatever. I'm in Dublin at the moment for the Dáil sitting this week, but before I left to go to Dublin, I mean, the general feeling around the town was that people were just they were shocked and they were concerned, but they weren't really wanting to say anything because they didn't want to. I mean, everybody knows the family involved and stuff like that. And it's, for everything, it's an impact on everybody, the families of the people who may be accused of something and the family of the deceased person as well, you know. So there's an impact there, and everybody's very conscious of that and doesn't want to add to any of the burden that people have at this time.
And there also is an understanding that as part of this investigation, there is searches ongoing focused around the Sliabh League area, and that is potentially a crime scene, and that's why access is being restricted.
Yeah, and I mean, that obviously is causing difficulties at the moment in terms of the tourist season and stuff like that. There, Sliabh League is the biggest attraction probably in the county at this stage. But, you know, that has to be... Hopefully, the investigation can be completed in the next day or two there, and Sliabh League will reopen to the public again. But you know, that again has to run its course too, and I think it's vitally important that it does. That the guards gather up whatever on all information that they can in relation to that. And hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. But you know, I think we have to let it run its course at the minute.
Okay, while I have you, and it's not in any way to distract from that serious issue that we've been just speaking about, obviously every newspaper is full of the story as it relates to RTE. We're covering it here. I find myself kind of trying to hold back a little bit to some extent because, you know, people might think there's sour grapes going on here, but I can assure people we're not motivated in that regard. I'm certainly not.
Highland Radio would never have done anything like that, would they?
No, sour grapes, not at all. Not the money I'm on. But anyway, What?
Is it all declared, Greg? That's the only thing,
it is. It is. It is all declared. Don't you worry about that. For what it's worth, and just to reiterate, by the way, we don't get paid that kind of money. I would say one of our salaries would cover most of the salaries here. But what's your takeaway from what's going on? It was an interesting turn of events yesterday in that we had a 9-page statement to effectively throw D Forbes under the bus, really, and it's just. I think it was last week, and I mentioned this at the top of the programme, I think it was last week when we were talking about another scandal within the HSC that, you know, once again, there's no accountability. And here, just less than a week ago, we had another exact example of what we were talking about. But what is your assessment as this story unfolds?
Yeah, I thought the statement yesterday, I read it last night from RTE, it really was just throwing D Forbes under the bus, and it's... not surprising that she's the only one that has resigned in relation to this, so they felt that they can say that she's totally to blame for it. I don't believe that anybody, even the top manager in an organisation, does anything in a vacuum and can do something like that without other people being aware of it and knowing what's happening. And the one thing I would say is that, there's an awful lot of people, and probably 99% of the people who work in an RTE are people who are working on an ordinary living wage and working wage, and they were told that they had to tighten their belts and everything got there, but yet the senior management in RTE were going around and giving one presenter money through the back door, and that's or seemingly money through the back door, alternative arrangements, you know, and that's wrong. And I feel for the ordinary workers in RTE in relation to that.
Yeah, and I think some of them, I think the average wage there is €55,000, yeah. But you have to work for 12 years to get to that point. And this at the same time where there's a freeze on wages and regular pay. I think a runner on the Late Late Show or researcher starts off around about €32,000-€33,000. So that's why we saw hundreds of staff, I would say, picketing outside various RTE locations yesterday.
And that's understandable, and because it impacts on everybody. Like, and when RTE's names drag through the gutter, it's not that senior management are going to be looking at it. It impacts on all everybody who works for the organisation. Now, the Dáil Committee, I think the Dáil Committee on Media, and that there is meeting today at 12 o'clock to have some of the management team from RTE will be in. Sadly, I don't expect that there'll be any significant will come
out of
that.
What do you think draws a line under this? So what has to happen for things to move forward? Because, of course, there's a couple of things going on. Ryan Tubridy's due another couple of 75,000s over the next year, next 2 years to 2025. We don't know really what his relationship with staff in RTE might be. We're not here to speculate about one individual's future, but that's just one part of it. But what do you think, especially as RTE constantly has the begging bowl out, and I think that's scuppered now, what draws a line under this, or how do we move forward on this? Because eventually we are going to have to.
Well, I think what would draw the line under it is that RTE have to fess up and they have to admit that they did this. They have to admit that there was more people than just D Forbes was involved in it. Like, you know, and that's a bit too convenient that she was the only person to do anything about it. And by the way, she has actually resigned, so therefore problem solved, nothing to see here. I mean, RTE, if another organisation was doing that, RTE journalists would be jumping up and down saying this is a cover up and stuff like that. There, you know, and that's. So we need to be sure that doesn't happen. I mean, RTE has a vital role to play as a public service organisation. It has that role to play, but it has to be clear-cut. And I think as well, too, what we have to think about, and this will be something for the longer scale, is that, you know, the politicians have forced RTE to become a commercially based organisation as well, and they depend on commercial funds for their viability. And that, I think, has led to a lot of this as well, too, where the government funding was being cut, and they're relying on advertising and stuff like that. There was increasing all the time, and then this idea then that they had to pay their top presenters way above anything that's up and being posted.
Like, I'd be really interested to see what would have happened if when Ryan Tubridy's agent says, "Look, he's not taking this pay cut. We need this extra amount of money," and if they said no, what would have actually happened? But let me just ask you one final question, if that's okay. When you say that RTE has a vital role to play as a public service broadcaster, what given the fact that we take 160 quid out of every household to fund that, what are they doing? What need are they servicing that the likes of News Talk and the independent radio stations aren't? Do you know that what separates them as being a vital service, as you described them, compared to what independent stations and media outlets are doing? Just and that's a genuine question, because it's one I couldn't answer.
That's understandable. Like, I mean, well, I think first of all, the risk is that if you have a privately owned station that's doing it, that can follow the lead of whoever the owner is, regardless of whatever station it is. Greg, I'm not saying that it's particular to News Talk or anything out there, but that's the risk that's involved. So a public service broadcaster is supposed to be above that.
Okay, but the public service broadcaster is paid for by the government, and it's the government then decides if it gets... So a lot of people listening to this program might think then it's clear that the government is the RTE's paymaster, because their coverage is really quite generally favourable to the government. So again, in that context, where is the vital role in democracy that I heard from the health minister yesterday, and in public service broadcasting, if some people believe it actually really is a government mouthpiece?
Yeah, and that's the problem. That's where you have to be very clear, and that RTE gets its funding regardless of whether they're seen as being favourable to the government or not, and that is a problem, and that's a risk that comes up quite a lot there, you know. But aside even from news coverage then as well, that there is a lot of Irish language coverage and documentary programmes and stuff like that that are made and funded by RTE, and with the best will in the world, I don't think the private organisations, now maybe if they got the funding they might be able to make them, but with the best will in the world they wouldn't be commercially viable at private organisations.
I get you, and listen, even in the area of sport, and I'm speaking as a listener, not as a presenter, there's two big games this weekend that are pay-per-view. So again, if public, I would have thought a public service mandate would mean that we get to see our national sport for free, because we're paying for it already, but we don't. We half of the games are on pay-per-view. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, but I don't think it's RDE that's making them pay-per-view.
Well, Dee Forbes is the head of GEA Go. I'm not sure if she stepped down from that position yet. But anyway,
I wasn't aware of that. I thought GEA Go was a GEA organization.
No. RTE and GEA are equal stakeholders in it, and Dee Forbes is RTE's rep on the GEA Go board. But anyway, listen. Thanks so much for your time, Thomas. I meandered a bit there, and I appreciate you going with me. Take care of yourself. Deputy Thomas Pringle there. All right, Des, I'm really sorry for holding you. Thanks for being patient with me, Des. Good morning to you.
Hello there, Greg. How's it going?
I'm doing okay. Des, tell us your story in your own words. I'll not lead into it. I just want to hear what you have to say.
I'm a very private person, and I don't like to draw attention to myself, so it takes a lot for me to come on to the radio show to discuss this, but shows my desperation. I've been very unwell for quite some time, and I would probably have ME, and it has turned severe. And my GP has done as much as he can, and he has sent me for a referral to see a specialist who maybe be able to see in July. But I've been ill for a very long time, as I say, before that. And my health has declined majorly. I never got a diagnosis in the past because it is near to impossible to get any kind of diagnosis or treatment. There's none available for ME. And I was in the position where I was looking after two elderly parents. And my father was very unwell. He had Alzheimer's and he had Parkinson's. And I was looking after him, and my health declined majorly, severely. And my sister was back from America, and she was shocked at the state of me, and she immediately brought me down to the doctor. And I was down in the waiting room for the doctor, and he came out to call me, and he came out, and he was visibly shocked at the state of me. And I was sent up to the hospital, and I was kept in for a period of time, and they'd done tests and they couldn't find anything. And as one of the nurses in the ward, a senior nurse, she even said to me, "Are you sure you want to leave?" And but I had no choice. I had to leave. But my health was in such decline that I was back in casualty another four times over a period of 6 months, and they can do nothing for me. And I was in such desperate, bad shape that I never thought the statement would trip off my tongue, but I was in St. Connell's for 10 days because my health has deteriorated so dramatically that I need to be in some kind of care or something. And there's nothing available for people with ME. It's shocking the lack of care.
And just for listeners who may not be aware, ME, it's also called chronic fatigue syndrome. And
that's correct.
It's affecting your concentration. Are you able to get around, or how is it affecting your everyday life, Des?
It has taken my life away from me. Basically, I'm so bad that I have to obviously cook for myself. I have nobody to depend on. And when I get up, I start shaking and I crash from any activity at all. It's a thing that's relevant to ME is a thing called post-exertional malaise, which is PEM, which means any activity that you do, it takes much more out of you than a normal person. And when you're severe, that could mean the smallest activity, and you're crashing then, and your body is, you're just like you're kind of going into a kind of shock or whatever. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But basically, my time is spent in bed. I cannot, as I say, I get up to feed myself, and that makes me worse, and then I go back to bed, and I'm just staring at the ceiling, and I have insomnia. I get confusion. I get shakes, as I say. I can't do anything. I get vertigo. I have food intolerances.
And are you having to deal with this all on your own, Des?
More or less. I have siblings, but they're in England, and one's in America, obviously.
Right,
and,
because as well as the ME, it sounds like you've been through, you know, a very stressful period of time, as you say, with your parents and with your own failing health. It's an awful lot for you to deal with, Des.
Yes, it is. That's why I had developed severe ME, because I was doing far too much and I hadn't got time to recover, and it destroyed my health completely. And the reason that I'm on is I want to highlight the lack of care and the lack of availability of anything. Like, I'm left to my own devices here, and to be quite honest, I don't see much of a future. That every day is hell. And I'm not joking.
Des, what can we do to try and help? I mean, what difference, say, for instance, if you got the official diagnosis from a consultant, what difference might that make? Does that mean that you would start some sort of there'd be some further supports for you? Do you know what I mean? Like, would that be a help, for an example?
At this stage, I don't know what benefit it would be to me. It would be down in your medical file that you're suffering from this illness and whatnot. But as I say, I am not able to function at all as a normal human being. And
can I make a suggestion, Des? What I would do if I were if I was your brother, and I'm not sure if this is appropriate or if it's controversial or not, Des, but I would get you in the car and I'd drive you to casualty. And I wouldn't let you out of that hospital until such time as something was being done, some sort of a package was being put in place to support you, or some sort of a treatment plan was put in place. That's what I would do. I'd put you in the car and I'd take you to casualty, because that's where you need to be. Go ahead, Des. Go ahead, Des, please.
Craig, that has been done 5 times. I was up with my sister 2 times, and they look at you and they do the tests. They do, and they say that we can't find anything wrong with you.
Mm.
And then they say you can go home. That's the problem with ME, that they can't find anything at this stage. And, you know, when you get a diagnosis, that's a diagnosis of exclusion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I'm difficulty thinking. I get very confused.
You're doing very, very well. Everything you've said so far has made absolute sense, and you're telling your story very well. So don't worry or be stressed about that.
But I understand what you're saying about getting your brother to do that. I have tried every avenue that I've done. I have went up to casualty, and I was kept in hospital on 2 occasions, and as I say, they've done tests, and they've done a lot of tests, and they don't show anything. And I was that desperate then that I went into St. Connell's for 10 days, and then they say that they can't do anything, that you have to see your GP. So you're stuck between two stools, and there's nobody that can help or do anything for you, you know. You're just kind of left to your own devices.
And you're losing weight, and your condition is worsening. You're losing weight, and sounds to me, Des, like you're losing hope as well too. And that's what I want us to, we'll endeavour to try and do what we can to try and move things along. What we can do, I don't know, Des, but I mean, as you say, you're a private person. This is the last type of a conversation in public you'd want to have.
Yes, well, it highlights the desperation of the situation. But I'm confused. I'm very underweight, and I'm very unwell, and I'm more or less bedbound, as I say. I can't go out and shop for myself. I can't function. I can't. That's just the reality of severe ME.
Even at this point, home help would be a great advantage to you. A professional diagnosis. These are two things that I think too might give you a little bit of a lift. A lift as well, Des. You might not feel quite as isolated as you clearly do.
Well, Greg, what I feel at this stage, what I would need is I would need to be put into care. That's what I feel, the reality of the situation. That's how bad it is.
Okay. Well, Des, leave it with us, okay? And I want you to contact us again if anything changes for you. We'll make some inquiries. What that will do, I'm not quite sure, but maybe the right person is listening that can point us in the right direction. But stay as strong as you can, Des, and stay in touch with us, okay? And
thank you, Greg.
We'll do as much as we can. But I want you to know as well that you're not alone. You can call us at any stage. Do you get me?
Thanks, Greg.
All right, okay. And don't be afraid to fire off a message on Facebook or something if you need that, okay? So I don't want you to feel you're not alone. We're here as much as we can be, and we'll make some inquiries to see if anything can be moved forward. But just to reiterate, I know you feel lonely, but you're not. We're listening to you, and we understand the situation, and we're backing you on this, Des.
Thanks, Greg. Thank you very much.
Stay strong. All right, thanks, Des. And we'll be in touch with Des again off air as well. As you can hear, a desperate situation for him. Right, okay. Let us get to a couple of comments just as we head now towards the news at 10 o'clock. And lots of you texting in, as you can imagine, to 086 60 25000. We appreciate all the texts, as you know. TG Cahir is independent. No scandals coming from there. Our real national broadcaster, RTE, is just a wing of the government. Public service broadcasting is clearly propaganda. Sure, we don't need RTE anyway. It's mostly reruns. We certainly don't need it when we have the 9 till noon show on YouTube. She was the DG of RTE and would have been the one who sanctioned and signed it all off. Indeed, but even in small organisations, it's pretty bizarre that no one else, there's a lot of people there, no one else said, hold on a second, what's going on here? D Forbes has took one for the team and left with a full hand, says the listener. Hi, Greg, we're fed up hearing from you what you do not earn that. Sorry. Well, Greg, we're fed up hearing from you that you do not earn that. Prove it. How do I prove it? I'll prove it to you individually if you just want to. I'm just on a normal wage here, everyone else. Why should RTE decide not to report on the Donegal rally? They're there to report the news, not to decide what news to report. Well, there's editorial policies, I suppose. Separately, coming from the new dual carriageway into the Polestar roundabout, it used to have two lanes, now it's got three. So two lanes of a car heading to the same exact point, and it's going to cause an accident. I don't know. I think that's helpful. I think that sort of separates the traffic. It's only for the last 100 metres, and you know, if you're turning right lane, if you're going straight mid lane, if you're turning left lane, I think the traffic at that point, it's filtering it and maybe keeping people in lane. But I take your point. Greg, why in Ireland do we need to show the year of the car in the registration? Surely this shouldn't matter or be anyone's business. I have cousins from America who thinks this is ridiculous. I never liked that either. But even, say, for instance, in northern plates, if you're in the know, I think you can tell from the letter what year the car is. But I would much prefer if the age of the car wasn't in the number plate personally. What do you all think? Would you like to see the age of the car gone from the number plate? 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. Okay.